These are stories about why something might be working or an attempt that may be struggling for some reason. And I also find it helpful to think about what it's not. So it's not a good news puff piece, and it's not a kind of hero story about one person doing something exceptional. It's more about ideas than individual characters. And, you know, a great solutions journalism story tends to be things that, you know, take a more systematic look at a problem and might be scalable or transferable.
Welcome to It's All Journalism. I'm Michael O'Connell, here with another podcast about digital media makers and journalism that matters. And we're talking today about stories that matter and change communities. The Tau Center for Digital Journalism just released a report on solutions journalism, a strategy for newsrooms to tell stories that elicit positive change in communities. Today, via Skype, I'm talking to Andrea Wenzel, one of the co-authors of the report. How are you doing, Andrea?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Well, great. I'm glad that you're in here. But I guess before we get going here, could you sort of tell me about your background as a journalist, how you got to the place where you are now?
Sure, of course. So I'm kind of a recovering journalist. I worked in public radio in the US and then did international media projects and training for about 15 years. But then I went back to school, where I'm now in a PhD program in communication at University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
First of all, about the report, let's start with the definition. What do you mean by solutions journalism?
So I think the Solutions Journalism Network offers a really helpful definition on this. And they say that solutions journalism is rigorous and compelling reporting on responses to social problems. You know, so these are stories about why something might be working or an attempt that may be struggling for some reason. And I also find it helpful to think about what it's not. So it's not a good news puff piece, and it's not a kind of hero story about one person doing something exceptional. It's more about ideas than an individual characters. And, you know, a great solutions journalism story tends to be things that, you know, take a more systematic look at a problem and might be scalable or transferable.
Can you sort of give an example of what that type of story might be?
So, for example, a story where you're looking at a police department's new initiative on mental health, where they're going around and talking to people or demonstrating a project that they're doing where they found a way that works to, you know, handle mental health issues. And, you know, it's something that other folks might hear in other cities and be like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that could apply to some of the challenges we're having. Or, you know, that it's something that looks at a social problem, but tries to focus on what's being done to try to address it.
The Tau Center just released this report. And what was it you were trying to set out to do with this report?
So one of the arguments people make about solutions journalism is it's sort of antidote to terribly depressing news, that basically audiences feel disempowered sometimes by the news that they get, and that solutions journalism can be a way to engage audiences more, a way to get folks to, you know, read stories and also talk about it with friends and maybe even think about how they can get involved in some way. And there's been some research on this by folks like the Solutions Journalism Network and the Engaging News Project. And there's been some promising things, some mixed things, but most of it's used sort of national level quantitative studies. And so for our Tau study, we wanted to try to complement this by looking at the local level, looking at, you know, what did people feel about solutions journalism when it was about their own communities? And we wanted to hear more about, you know, why people felt the way they did by using qualitative focus groups, so we could kind of really dig in to understand it.
So what was your methodology here? I know, you know, having read the report, you sort of focus on a community in South Los Angeles?
Yes. Yeah. So we focused on a community in South Los Angeles, and we used focus groups. So we, you know, talked to 48 African-American and Latino residents of South Los Angeles. And this was following up on a series that we had done in conjunction with a research group called the Metamorphosis Project. And they had done this series leading up to the 50th anniversary of the Watts riots, where they got together community organizations and local media to do a series of solutions journalism stories. And these stories looked at things like, you know, health, jobs, housing, education, public space. And we wanted to understand, how do residents from South LA feel about how their community was covered? And so we organized these six focus groups, and you know, had folks, you know, read the stories and actually read a solutions version and a non-solution version, and then talk about the stories, but also talk about sort of the larger context of media coverage of their community.
So what were some of the conclusions you were able to take away from that?
Overall, you know, people responded pretty well to the sort of problem-solving orientation of solutions journalism. And, you know, they said they'd be more likely to seek out news and share stories with friends or family if it was a solutions-oriented story, if those kinds of stories were more common. But they did have some concerns, and, you know, they were afraid. You know, they didn't want just good news. They were concerned that, you know, we do need to know about the problems, you know, and we don't want people to think that, you know, all the problems have been solved. But, you know, a lot of times their concerns had a lot to do with the overall context of living in a community that has a long history of being stigmatized. And so, you know, they didn't want media to just show the bad stuff, but they also, you know, they wanted to find media that would, you know, show their community by, you know, including people who were articulate and could give, you know, a better range of perspectives from their community. So they were intrigued by solutions journalism, but they thought it could be even stronger if it included more community input and had more follow-up coverage. So they thought it would be something that, you know, they would like to see more, but they were still kind of overall skeptical about, you know, how the media would go about it.
So in practical terms, how does solutions journalism work? You know, how is it different from, you know, just somebody going to the community to report a story?
I think it's not necessarily that different. I think, you know, solutions journalism shares a lot in common with, you know, good investigative reporting. You know, the best stories take a critical look at a social problem, but it puts the efforts to solve a problem at the center instead of just kind of tacking it on at the end. So it, you know, it has the same issues as far as requiring a lot of resources.
So what types of stories work best? Is it something that you like look at a community and say, okay, we want to address, you know, a particular problem, or we want to reflect some aspect of the community that may not be being representative well in our coverage?
I think, you know, any issue, any social challenge could be covered from a solutions angle. I don't think it's necessarily one particular kind of story. I think it's similar to, like, you know, investigative reporting and enterprise reporting, where it's not like a reactionary kind of reporting. It's something that takes work and takes investigation and kind of, you know, looking for what are like examples of unusually successful projects, as well as just looking at, you know, what's the big fire, what's going wrong.
Is then the sort of the end result is that you get the public more engaged in the news, and then also maybe having them better represented in the coverage that you're doing?
That's hopefully, yeah. I mean, I think there's been some studies that have shown that solutions journalism coverage has, you know, a better success rate as far as people clicking on the stories and also sharing them with other people. It's something that needs more research, but, you know, definitely, you know, as far as, particularly when you're talking about underserved communities and stigmatized communities, I mean, this is a hugely valuable thing for them. And I think that's something that, you know, it gives people a fuller understanding of what their community is, and it makes them more likely to say, oh, you know, this is something that I could get involved in possibly. Or I think for communities that have been underserved, to have coverage that doesn't just show, you know, the crime, the, you know, poverty, all the kind of stories that they see as, quote, typical stories for about their community, having solutions journalism coverage of those sorts of communities is especially valuable. And it also, I think, adds to the likeliness of greater levels of civic engagement. And this is something that, you know, some of the the research has shown so far, and also was reflected in what people we spoke to, as far as people saying, you know what, when I read a story like this, it makes me think, well, maybe there's something I could do about this issue. Maybe I could volunteer. So, for example, one of the stories people read was about an effort to do something about vacant lots in their community. And there was, you know, some lots had been transformed into little parks. And so people were thinking, oh, you know, how could we go about getting involved in this issue in our own neighborhoods? And it featured people from the community who were, you know, thoughtful and articulate and doing good work. And this was something that they felt they did not see enough of. So it had a benefit in that way.
Yeah, it benefits, I would imagine, for the way they are seen in the community, but then also how the larger community, the larger audience of whatever the media outlet is, they begin maybe to see a community that typically people might think is, you know, marginalized or, you know, it has a lot of violence or you know, that isn't reflected maybe in sort of telling how that community actually is, I guess is probably the easy way to say it or the roundabout way to say it. So how is this different from earlier efforts to engage communities in a more positive manner in approach to covering, reporting the news, like peace journalism or civic journalism?
Sure. I mean, I think it follows in the footsteps of these other kinds of movements, these things that saw a more active role for journalists, thinking that journalists should be actively trying to engage the public. And I think, you know, peace journalism tried to question journalists' tendency to just focus on conflict, but it took a more advocacy journalism approach than solutions journalism. And civic journalism tried to engage audiences as potential participants in problem solving. And I think solutions journalism relates to this camp, but maybe puts efforts to address social problems even more at the core of stories.
In taking this sort of social journalism approach, you sort of mentioned advocacy. How do journalists avoid drifting into advocacy? You know, can solutions journalists really kind of be truly objective?
Well, I mean, I would question, honestly, whether objectivity is possible for any journalists. I think, you know, balance is possibly something more realistic to strive for. But I think solutions journalism has the same problems as any journalism. I think the genre is not meant to advocate for one solution or, you know, this is the best solution. It's not supposed to be PR, and it needs reporting on an attempt with the same kind of critical eyes any story would have. So it's just saying that journalists can play a valuable role by focusing on the pursuit of solutions.
Yeah, one of the things that was in the report, it was probably wasn't necessarily a big thing in it, but it started to get me thinking about how the different ways that journalists cover news, that we talk about people who do health journalism, that it's you know, they have sort of a different approach to it. We're going to be reporting all these different aspects of it, but it's in service of the reader. You maybe not be advocating stuff, but your approach is different. And I think, you know, in sort of the way that I began to see solutions journalism described in the report, that's maybe kind of what we're thinking about, is that, you know, a different sort of way of approaching journalism so that it's, you know, helping people.
Yeah. I mean, that part of the journalist's role, it's not only to talk about, you know, what's the crisis is and what's going wrong, but also to think about, you know, what is going well and how can we learn from that?
Right, exactly. Now, what challenges do newsrooms face in adopting a social journalistic approach? Is this something that can be sustainable? Is it something that would be just sort of a part of their general coverage? Or is somebody going to be more successful, you know, going all in and this is the type of journalism we're going to do?
I think it's something that could be integrated into general coverage. I think it's sort of just an orientation that you can ask, you know, about any coverage that you do, like what could a solution be to this issue? And I think that, you know, doing some of these stories has the same sort of resource challenges as investigative and enterprise stories in that they require more time. They require, you know, more resources to do. But I think the payoff is definitely worth it. I think you can make an argument for that investment, you know, in that it can lead to more engaged audiences.
Yeah, and we sort of talked around this sort of engagement here, but one of the things, you know, there's sort of this adage in journalism that if it bleeds, it leads. We have this idea that the news that people want and that they're going to be mostly engaged in are things like, you know, crime and violence, things that are going to impact them directly. You know, by comparison, how engaging are solutions journalism stories to audiences?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's understandable why people are attracted to negative stories. I mean, if you think about evolution, it's like you want to know when there's a threat. But I mean, people in South LA that we talked to, they found values at times to negative stories. You know, sometimes this was information that could help them avoid a certain block if there was a safety concern or a gang issue going on in a certain area. But at the same time, studies of solution journalism show that they actually might be more effective at engaging audiences. People are only going to, people get fatigued from the negative stories sometimes, and they might rather click on a story that's something a little bit different, something that is about a solution. And those can have a direct effect on them too. I mean, the stories about, you know, these efforts to transform vacant lots into parks, I mean, this had a direct effect for the people we talked with. They were saying, oh, well, you know, if this is going on, then I'm actually able to take my grandkid there to play, you know. So these things can have like just as much of an effect on people's daily lives. But yeah, I mean, I think like the actual engagement piece needs more research and investigation, but I don't think that we can assume that the negative stories are going to be more engaging.
Now, you looked at South Los Angeles, and we talked a little bit, and also the report sort of addresses stigmatized communities and sort of using this sort of approach to, you know, change the way those communities are being covered. But solutions journalism can work pretty much anywhere in any type of community. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and most efforts to look at solutions journalism have been a little bit broader as far as looking at national audiences and looking at, you know, just communities in general. So yeah, there's no reason it couldn't be relevant for any community.
Can you talk about any of those sort of broader solutions journalism efforts?
I can very briefly, but I can say that if people are interested in finding out more about that, they should look at the Engaging News Project and the Solutions Journalism Network, where they've done some kind of more quantitative big surveys of people, where they look at, you know, a version of a story that's a solutions oriented story and a version that's not, and compare, you know, how long do people stay on the page? What are they more likely to click on? You know, how likely are they to share it with someone? So looking at how does it impact, or how can you measure the impact of solutions stories versus non-solutions stories? And those have been promising, but there has been some mixed results.
So how, you know, what solutions do you give in your solutions journalism paper or report about, you know, how newsrooms can sort of integrate this into what they're doing?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a few things that we made recommendations about in this paper, and you know, some of them particularly have, you know, particular value for communities that are stigmatized. So, I mean, in communities where there's been sort of damaged relations with the media, we think that this is a really great opportunity for media to kind of reconnect with communities in a positive way. And the model that the Metamorphosis Research Group developed of connecting community organizations with local media and residents to do stories, we think is really worth pursuing and investigating more. But, you know, there's also other things that newsrooms can think about as far as engaging residents in the process more of doing solution storytelling. And this might be things like outreach tools to connect media to people, like things like Harkin or Listening Post, and these sorts of things that can kind of involve people in asking questions and involve them in the process. And it also might be things like community foundations, investing in, you know, working to get community organizations and residents to communicate more with journalists, and to try to kind of strengthen the infrastructure. So I think, you know, there's some things that the Dodge Foundation does around this and others. But, you know, because sometimes there's a gap between communities and journalists that's just about, it's more about the language and the culture of talking about stories, you know, when really, you know, the stories that everyone wants to hear about might be the same. And so, you know, I think ultimately, like, just trying to see like how newsrooms can explore this more. I think sometimes just the word solutions journalism is intimidating and maybe puts some people off, but it's really not that different than just doing really good journalism. It's just thinking about, you know, what role can people play that, you know, may have better engagement outcomes in the end and might really help people's reporting have a greater impact.
Now, you know, a lot of the people who listen to our podcast are new journalists or, you know, are just coming into the career. And, you know, how can somebody, you know, go into solutions journalism and, you know, maybe try to integrate it into their newsroom, which may not be thinking about?
Well, I mean, I would recommend reading up on examples of solutions journalism. The Solutions Journalism Network does have a lot of resources. They have a sort of like how to do it and like tips on like how to use databases to kind of get ideas for possible stories, and just examples of what some other newsrooms have been doing that might kind of demystify it a little bit and make it something that makes a little bit more concrete sense. But I think that just, even just asking, what's going surprisingly well in my community or maybe in another community, and why is it working or why is it not working? Because it's not always just the positive story. I mean, it can also be like, here's an attempt that worked in some ways but really fell flat in others. It's just asking the why about, what can we learn from this attempt to address this social challenge?
So what do you hope people take away from this report?
I hope people think both about, what they might be able to take from solutions journalism for their own reporting in their own newsrooms, but also think a little bit about how they're covering communities that are historically stigmatized and thinking about how they invest their reporting resources in those communities. It can be things like, maybe we should try to see if we can hire a reporter who's from those communities, or maybe it's just we need to give people the time to connect with communities long enough that they can do follow-up coverage, that they can really get to know what are the local sensitivities and how people might feel about being represented a certain way, and just kind of investing more in that, because I think that's, a good takeaway in general, not just for solutions journalism, but I think solutions journalism offers a great opportunity, particularly for those communities.
Yeah, we've had a number of podcasts recently where we've been talking about diversity and how, newsrooms maybe not as diverse as they need to be, and how maybe they're not reflecting the diversity of the communities. And, this certainly seems like a way to, bridge that gap, trying to get yourself into that community in a positive way, make the community know more about who you are and what you're trying to do. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like not just, I think it's great for media who want to connect with communities to think, not just about what stories they tell, but the way those stories are told, who is telling them and what angle are they using and what person do they choose to represent a certain perspective? Are they really thoughtful about that and not doing it in ways that just kind of reproduce stereotypes?
Yeah. I agree with that. That's something, people forget this is journalism. It can be hard, and it should be hard. I think we need to challenge ourselves and make sure that we're just not, continuing falsehoods and false perceptions of things, and actually tell the stories that are there. And sometimes that requires getting a little deeper into the community, so that you're actually sort of understanding it and begin to see things from other people's eyes. Fascinating. Now, this is a really great report, and I highly recommend that people read it. I'm going to have the link on our website. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm in Chicago. I'm actually working on my dissertation research, which is a little bit different, but I'm interested in continuing to look into solutions journalism and also, efforts to help local media outlets listen to communities. So, I'm very interested in, things like Harkin and the Listening Post and those sorts of things. But just, keeping an eye on this issue, because I think it's going to keep, there's a lot of dynamic projects going on, and I just want to kind of keep my eye on them.
Yeah, we had just had a podcast. We were talking to a couple of people from the Dodge Foundation about the work they're doing in New Jersey, and they talked about Listening Post and Harkin. And it's so weird, if you think about it, the journalists, what we're supposed to do is go out there and talk to people. And just the idea that we maybe aren't listening as well as we should be is kind of fascinating to me sometimes. I don't know why. I mean, it's our basic skill. We're supposed to listen first and then report. But
It's sometimes it's hard to connect with the people sometimes it's easier to listen to the same people, I guess, right? The people who are more vocal or who know how to reach you and you know how to reach them. And so I think it's harder to find those people who maybe, your news outlet hasn't had a great history of connecting with. And that's something that I think is really interesting. And there's people who are kind of poking at that and trying to figure that out. And that's fascinating.
Yeah. Get new voices in your journalism. That's super important.
That's the big challenge.
The people that you talk to, but also the people that you're having to ask those questions to diversify your workforce. This has been great, Andrea. Like I said, I really enjoyed the report. I'm going to make sure it gets shared on our website. Thanks for talking to us. This has been great.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Next time on It's All Journalism.
I try to spend a lot of time reading, you know, news reports and tweets and Facebook posts from the different parts of the world where I'm covering, talk to experts who might be able to see the reactions from those countries with a bit more context. That can kind of fuel why it is that people are doing the way the things that they are, because it's too easy to just sort of disregard this as one unified insurgent campaign that's spreading across the world. It's actually many different sort of fractured kinds of campaigns that are going on here. And getting that sort of cultural perspective, I think, is the easiest way to start.
In our next episode, I talked to Paul Shinkman of U.S. News and World Report about covering the national security scene. You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and now Google Play. Subscribe on any of those platforms to get our podcast delivered straight to your ears. This week's podcast was produced by me, Michael O'Connell, and Nicole Legrisco. It's All Journalism is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.